Big shout out today to my folks at Helix Sleep. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz and they will match you with a mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. And we need that in our world today. It's stressful. Find your perfect mattress at helixsleep.com/funches. I'm Ron Funches. I do a podcast called Getting Better with Ron Funches, where we focus on getting better, how we're all works in progress, how we're all struggling and trying to do our best. And you can get the podcast on YouTube. You can get it Apple, Spotify, wherever you pod your cast. It is there. Of course, it is available live on Mondays about 12:30 p.m. Pacific on twitch.tv. Ron_Funches is the account. If you want to come watch out and hang with me and play games. If you want to play some Call of Duty with me, you want to play some Mario Kart with me on Sundays. If you want to play some Super Mario 3D World with me. If you just want to hang out, if you want to watch some wrestling, if you just want to be a part of a cool, optimistic, very supportive community that is the Funch Bunch, where we support each other's goals and dreams and at the same time talk shit and talk about Choco Tacos. Come and hang out with me. Twitch.tv, Ron_Funches is the account. I'm on just about every day, unless I got work to do, and then I disappear for 2 weeks. But I always come back. You know how you can support the podcast. Get yourself a t-shirt at ComedianTees.com. Get a Get High Watch Wrestling shirt, Getting Better shirt, Affirmation shirt, whatever you need, it is there for you. Also, friends such as Blair Saki, Billy Wayne Davis, Brian Poe. Saying if you want to get one of their shirts, you can find them all at ComedianTees.com. Also, you know, one of the best ways you can support the podcast is by Patreon, patreon.com/gettingbetterwithron. If you want your own personal affirmations, if you want me to be your personal hype man, your cheerleader, to have your back in the day, if you need a little voicemail for when you're feeling blue, for when you need a little push, I would love to do that for you. You just go to patreon.com/gettingbetterwithron, and then just support us. There's gifts at every level. If you want the personal affirmation, that is at the $10 level, but there are thank you notes, there are posters, there are t-shirts, there are things for every level, including exclusive episodes, including Charlene Yee and one of my good friends in the pro wrestling industry, Tama Tonga. So check those out if you get the chance. Anything else that I need? Oh, let's see. I'm on a show called Top Secret Videos on True TV every Thursday at 10:30. Check that out. I think that's all I need to promote right now. So let's get started with the affirmations. You know how we do it. I miss you. I've been gone for a couple weeks, so I want to do them. I hope you're feeling strong. I hope you're feeling brave. I hope you're feeling loved, grateful for that love, especially the day after Valentine's Day. And I hope even if you don't feel like you have that romantic love in your life, you are aware of the way that love has come into your life. I know a lot of people consider Valentine's Day a made-up holiday, a Hallmark holiday. And in some ways it is. It has been taken over in that way. But I feel... And call me a fucking hippie if you will, especially while I wear this shirt. But love is one of the most powerful forces in this world, if not the most powerful force in this world. And I think having true love, having someone that loves you and wants the best for you above all, is so rare and so wonderful and should always be celebrated. And if you have that in your life in any form, you know I have that for me in a few ways. I know my mom loves me unconditionally and always supports me and is there for me no matter what. And I know some people don't have that with their parents, and I don't have that 100% with my dad either. You know, our relationship is strained, but I am happy about the relationship I have with my mom, that I never feel that I can tell her that I can't tell her something. I can tell her anything. She always supports me, she always believes in me, and I always feel better after a conversation with her, and I'm grateful for that. And then I'm also grateful for my relationship with Robot, the fact that I feel that the only person that I feel loves me like that, takes care of me like that, tells me when I'm being a fucking jerk or an idiot is Mrs. Funches. And so I truly appreciate her, as well as my son, who as I watch him go older and he gets closer and closer, turning 18 years old in April. I like watching the man that he's become and how strong he is and how kind he is and how he believes in manners and being polite to people. And that he always cares about me, even when he tells me he doesn't miss me after I was gone for 2 weeks. But he then does give me a hug that lasts for a couple minutes. So I'm like, okay, well, you said you didn't miss me, but I feel like you did a little bit at least. But if you feel like you don't have any of that, have good standards for yourself, love for yourself. Self-love is extremely important. Self-esteem, having boundaries, having belief that you are important, that you are worth believing in. That's most important at all. Having love for yourself. And at a time period, I didn't have that. I didn't take care of my health. I didn't take care of who I was. I didn't take care of what I thought and push. And I would, people pleaser. If somebody says something, even if I didn't believe in it, I didn't want to get into a conflict. I didn't want to get into an argument. But part of loving yourself and believing in yourself is sticking up for yourself and knowing what you believe in and knowing what you care about and being strong enough to go, hey, fuck you. I don't fucking like how you're talking right now. And you can take that shit elsewhere. Because we don't do that over here. And whether that's with racism or sexism, homophobia, people who are transphobic, things like that. That's the shit I don't fuck with. I don't believe with. And I don't carry that with me. And I don't mean, hey, at the same time, I'm trying to, as much as I would love to change your heart, and I would love for you to be different, I'm not going to waste my time. I'm not going to waste my energy. I'm not going to waste my focus on trying to get you to come over to where I am. I'm going to just keep plowing down my lane and let you know if you aren't on the same vibe I am, you're just not welcome. And to me, that's perfectly fine. A lot of people disagree there. It's like, well, you got to be able to work with everybody, all different types of people. And I do believe in that on certain individuals. If you like Coke and I like Pepsi, if you like Republicans and I like Democrats, and I don't even really like Democrats, but if you just like certain things and I like certain things, that's fine. But if you are like, oh, I'm racist, and I just happen to believe that this race is better than another race, I can't fucks with you. I can't argue with you. I can't get in a conversation with you about it. I can't say like, well, let's find some other common ground. All I can really say is fuck you and move on. And that's what I'm going to be about, because I'm not going to waste my mental energy. Too many things going on in the world. There's too much opportunity out there. That's the thing a lot of people are focusing on. They see all the chaos and they see all the drama and they see nothing but bad, but there's so much opportunity. Start something new. I started this Twitch like 6 months ago. It's already profitable for me. It makes me some money. It doesn't make me a lot of money. But you combine this with the Patreon and doing that, it makes me more money than when I was working at that grocery store that I worked at. And that's how I look at it. I don't need it to be making me $1 billion, $1 million within 6 months. But the fact that it made me any money within 6 months. I didn't make any money in my first 6 months of stand-up comedy, but I've made some money in my first 6 months of Twitch because I was willing to try something new, see how that would go. And I recommend, especially right now while things are still locked up, everybody's still feeling oppressed and locked down, try something new, get out your comfort zone, push yourself into something different and see where it takes you, because it's always a slow go, but you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised. I sit around all the time thinking about, man, I just left this job. I got a job so fun, I can't even tell you about it. That it's a secret. They won't let me tell you. And I love that. I went from 6, 7, 8 years ago, I was working at a fucking bank call center thinking I'd never leave Salem, Oregon. And now I got a show that I can't even tell you about. That's pretty cool to me. You never know how things will go. How things will work out. So keep pushing it. Keep moving forward. keep moving forward with grace and happiness. If you're depressed right now, I want to reach out and specifically talk to you because I get it. In the winter, we were talking about this around Christmas time. If you remember, if you was listening to the podcast, we were talking about this, that the past Christmas, that post-holiday malaise was going to come out and get people all depressed because we were getting all hyped about the vaccinations that are taking forever to get pushed out. We were hyped for the holidays and thinking that things were going to turn around and be well, and then people are back out there in these streets getting sick and not caring as much. But you got to stay patient, stay focused, get through this winter, and keep your mind relaxed, and don't worry about all the bullshit that's going on. You see all these other people out partying and having dinners and doing that shit. You stay on your focus, keep your eyes on your paper, and we will get through this together. And if you're not feeling great right now, that is okay. That is perfectly fine. Find some music. Find some comedy. Find some weed. Find something positive that'll get you out. Find some exercise. Find a ride a bike around the block like I've been doing recently. Find Super Mario Bowser's Fury. That's a fucking recommendation I need to make right now. When I've been feeling down, feeling a little sad and a little depressed, I've been popping on that Mario Bowser's Fury, and it has been putting a smile on my face. Cause something, I don't know, there's nothing like Nintendo to put a smile on your face, whether you're a child, a grown adult, or somewhere in between. So I would say take a moment, find some silly fun to have, enjoy yourself, enjoy your free time, enjoy your things. If money is stressing you out, I understand that. But again, use that to push yourself into finding new opportunities, new focuses. Like I did this college gig this last week, and I was like, hey, you college boys and girls, get them Twitches, them OnlyFans going. Because you can't count on this regular job shit. You don't know anything about it. You know, use that money to invest in yourself and push yourself to where you want to go. And whether that's in a corporate space, an entertainment space, a crafting space, whatever it is, figure out what makes you happy, because it's one thing we learned for sure. Nothing is promised. And just trying to go down the middle of the road because you think it's safe. Ain't nothing safe. There's no safe space. So might as well be daring. Have some fun. Our guest today is a improviser, comedian. You can see him on AP Bio. He's a cutie little kid who I love. He's an adult, but to me, he's a child. Enjoy this conversation with my friend, great comedian and cool guy, Nick Pine. Enjoy it.
Nick, thanks for being on my podcast. I appreciate it. First of all, how you doing? You holding up okay?
I am holding up all right. Not sick as far as I know. And yeah, I'm hanging in there, man. How are you? How's the family?
Doing great. Thank you for asking. They're doing well. Everybody's holding up. I like your look. You have a Billy Crystal at a baseball game look going
on.
Yeah,
I like to think of it as like a nerdy Navy SEAL.
You're giving yourself a lot of credit.
Yeah,
you're a SEAL. You made it all the way.
Yeah, I made it all the way. Yeah. Well, I'm like the SEAL on the team. Where look at this nerd.
I don't think that they have that.
Oh, they don't have those at all. No.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. One way I start my podcast is by giving a compliment and saying what I enjoy about you. What I like about you is you're a good actor, you're a good comedian, but more than what I liked about you than you is that you're a kind gentleman. You're when I worked with you on AP Bio, you're so just easy to get along with on set, which is more difficult than sometimes people imagine. And also I think more difficult because you guys have a very young set, you know, you have a lot of kids in their late as human teens and early 20s and things like that.
Right.
And so for the most part, when I was on that set, I tend to keep to myself because I'm like, well, you know, I'm 10 to 12 years older than these people. They probably don't want to talk to me. But you, when I saw you, you were so nice to me. You came up to me and then you were talking. And then I told my fiance where you were like, you don't know who this guy is. You don't know who Ron Funches is. Yeah. And it just made me feel so good and so at home. And I really appreciate someone who has a spirit like that to make someone feel at home like that. And
I just want to thank glad, you. Man. Well, like I say, it was, you know, it was partly, I have to be honest, it was partly selfish because I've just been like a Ron Funches fan for like 12 years.
Oh, nice. That's like right when I started getting okay at this.
That's what I'm saying. I never knew about you when you sucked. When you started getting okay, I that's when I started paying attention. I was like,
that really worked out for me then. But I want to talk a little bit about your background and your history. When I was reading a bit about you, it said that you had a lot of open heart surgeries and spinal surgery when you were a kid.
Yeah, I've had four open hearts and one spinal surgery.
Why didn't you just stop at the one?
That's what I was like. I was like, I think one's enough. And they were like, nah, you're not going to live very long if you don't do another couple. And I was like, if you have to.
Is that what helped develop your sense of humor at an early age, I assume?
I think it just made me kind of, you know, I think when you confront your mortality at an early age, it kind of makes you grow up a little bit quicker. And I'd always been a fan of stand-up, you know, forever. Like that was one of the things I really enjoyed. I remember the night before I had my last open heart when I was 14, I watched Delirious. And you know, it's comedy was always there for me. Mm-hmm. And in tough times. And then when I was like 17, I was like, let's see if we can give this a try.
What spurred that? What gave you the spark to do that?
Well, I wanted to be an actor when I was in high school. I wanted to do that professionally, but I was from, you know, lived in Minnesota and there was no blueprint for how to do that. Like that just didn't seem like a job that anybody had. And also how do I get that job? So, and also everything sort of in my life system was pushing me to go to college and to have an academic life. And so stand up, I'd always, like I said, always been a fan of it, but it also seemed like a way to keep that creative side of me kind of alive, mm-hmm, while going to college. And, you know, my parents aren't super happy about this, but that's one of the reasons I didn't do very well in college, because I was doing stand-up like five nights a week.
You found out very quickly as soon as you started it that it was the thing for you, that it was what you wanted to do?
Absolutely. I was like, this is what I want to do this.
So fun. That seems that for a lot of comedians, a lot of people in entertainment have similar stories. It's not necessarily, you know, open heart surgeries or things of that nature. But I know for me, growing up with single parent household, and there was my mom was in an abusive relationship. And right. What helped save me a lot of times was being able to tune out of that and watch I Love Lucy or watch Comic View and just watch these stand-ups. And I hear a lot of comedians, they always say, like, you know, comedy saved my life.
I feel bad in that regard because I feel like I almost feel inauthentic, but because it seems like some of the most people in stand-up have you know, not the best upbringing, not the happiest early life. Mm-hmm. And mine was, I mean, I had heart surgery and stuff, but it was fine. Like my parents were still together.
Yeah, I wouldn't discredit the four heart surgeries. Yeah, so, you're like, it was a normal, everyday childhood where you have four open heart surgeries and a spinal surgery before you're 15.
Yeah. Just
like, I think you can go ahead and it's okay that you've been through some stuff, Matt.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
But I think there's I see people
like, yeah, my single parent. I'm like, wow, my parents, they love me. My parents are fine. They're together and they love me. I don't have, but I guess when you look at it, that was hard in a different way.
Yeah, that's all I'm trying to say is everyone has their own cross to bear. And you, to be honest, if your parents were also not doing well and you were in a bad situation, that might be a bit too much.
That might be too much. You're right. You're right. That might be too much. But it's great, man. I remember, and we talked about this on set, you and I met before, you know, everybody, I assume people know that you were on AP Bio season 2 for a second, but now you've got a big guest episode in season 3, which is hilarious. And I was so excited that you were back because I've been a fan of yours for years, and you and I met, well, you didn't remember this, 8 years ago, briefly, at Just for Laughs, the last time they had it in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited to meet you because I've been watching your stuff on Rooftop. And I don't know, it was just one of those kind of awkward moments that I was like, yeah, he's probably not going to remember that. Because I didn't really know what to say.
But I love the beauty in that because I don't remember that moment, but I do remember that weekend and being there. And I love that it came full circle that then we're working together and hanging out together. Who were your earliest comedic influences? Who did you grow up loving?
My all time favorite since I was like 4 was Sinbad.
I love that.
I love Sinbad. Sinbad to me was like, and I finally got to see him last year. I'd never seen him live. I finally got to see him. He was amazing. He came out and he did, even at, I don't know how old he is now, got to be 60. And he came out, no opener, did an hour and 50. It was amazing. So Sinbad, I remember my parents got a VHS tape of Afros and Bell Bottoms. Mm-hmm. That HBO special he did in 93. I used to watch that all the time when I was a kid. And then, of course, when I was old enough, my parents let me watch Pryor and Eddie Murphy. And it's funny, though, like those guys are the legends. But who I was most influenced by when I was learning how to do stand up were guys like you, like club comics. Because I remember when I first started doing it, that's when Rooftop was big and they used to put their stand-up clips online, and that was where I got to know, like, not necessarily guys who were superstars, but guys who were like, who were club comics at that time.
Yeah.
And that's how I learned where, you know, where stand-up comedy was. Mm-hmm. You know, so I learned the most from watching guys like you in the late 2000s.
That's really interesting, because that's like, that is so smart in a way, because you can go back and see where comedy came from when you're watching Sinbad and watching Richard Pryor and those things. But there's such a big disconnect from being like an open micer to that hour and 50 minutes, and to have the guys in the trenches, you can really go like, okay, this is where things are going.
Right.
That's
how I learned to write jokes. Like, you know, you're not on stage for an hour and a half telling a 15-minute story. You've got, you know, when you're starting, like at Acme, they would give you 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I want to, you know, I don't want to tell a 3-minute story that has one punchline. I want to tell, you know, jokes. And watching club comics, I learned how to write like 30-second, 45-second bits. And that was super valuable. So I love that.
I just love being that you're a student of it, and that you love comedy, and that's what I love in any comedians. Is sometimes you don't, even in people who are just straight stand up, sometimes you don't see that you don't see a love of the history of it, you
right?
Know?
And you got to appreciate both. Yeah, I mean, loving where it came from and the grand, you know, hour and a half specials, but then realizing when you're starting out, learning how to do it. In the clubs, with the open mics is a different thing.
Yeah, but some people don't know that. I know there were several people when I first started who wanted to do an hour for their first set.
Me too. Yeah. I would see guys go up and like try to tell a 10-minute story when they've got 5 minutes and just run the light and there was no laughs in between. And you're like, oh, this is a different thing that I have to learn how to do right now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was
learning how to be a professional, the difference between going up there and wasting people's time and just telling long stories, using them as a therapist as opposed to remembering you're there to serve the audience.
Right. Right.
Absolutely. I want to talk a bit about just us being on set on that, because that was pretty much the last thing I did right before the quarantine. We're all on set together hanging out. And it was so weird because I remember being like, it was right before my birthday and I was like, I'm going to Hawaii. I'm excited. I get to be a pro wrestler, but also I'd like to wrap this shit up so I can get going. Right. But now I'm like, man, I should have been a little bit more grateful. I should have been a little bit more happy to be on set because I haven't been on set since then, you know? And
we couldn't have known what was coming, but that was, I miss it. I never knew how much I'd miss it, especially me being on that show. And you've been on shows where that's every day you're there and it becomes a job. And then you don't have that job anymore. And you're like, man, I wish I had that job.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's so weird how it can become a job and you can kind of start getting used to it.
Right.
And then, it's nice. In some ways, it's nice to be reminded that it's very special and we're so lucky to do what we do.
That's one of the reasons I have shit like this up, because I'm like, you remember how lucky you are to have this job.
I look at it
every day and remember how, you know, you're not waiting tables. You're lucky. Appreciate it. Don't, obviously it's going to become, you can't do it all the time, but as much as you can, appreciate getting up at 5, getting there at 6, be happy. That's your life.
Yeah. I think, I don't speak for you, but me growing up in Chicago and being a Midwesterner, that thing that wasn't really foreign to me. I was like, well, everyone gets up early and works hard and works long shifts, but at least when I do it, someone brings me breakfast.
Right.
I get to lay down and play my Nintendo in between takes, you know? And like other people, they're working 8-10 hours straight, you know?
I get to go play dress up. I get pampered. I get to, sit there.
Do you love that? Because the way you said that makes me think, because one of my favorite secret things on set is when you get to go into wardrobe, because usually it's like a little bit older women that are just like, look at you. You look so cute. And I'm thank you so much.
Totally. And I always played up like, look, you look so cute. I'm like, come on. And I'm like doing little poses.
It's so fun. It's one of the last places where people are still allowed to sexually harass you.
Yeah. Like, oh, thank you.
You made me look like this.
Like, that looks so good on you. Like, it looks all right. I guess. Yeah, it's fun.
What are some of your goals in your career? You're still a young man in your career. You're still...
Relatively, man. I'm turning 30 this year, so it's,
That's beautiful, though. To me, that's when I couldn't wait to get out of my 20s, because again, I knew my comedic history, and right. I was like, For most of the stand-ups I grew up, it looked like it was all about just make it through your 20s.
Yeah,
just survive. You'll get a little bit of success in your 30s. And then if you survive some more, you get that big 40 success.
Right. Where you don't have to worry anymore. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. I did my 20s weren't bad, but I definitely did a lot of growing up and a lot of figuring it out and kind of finding myself. You don't quite know who you are yet. And now I feel like I'm finally starting to settle into myself. I can't wait. So
who are you?
Yeah.
You tell me, who are you?
Who am I?
Yes.
I am. I'm Nick Pine. I'm a good actor. I'm comfortable. Good comic. I know where I'm going and what I want. I know what I bring to the table. I know my worth. Finally, it's all good.
Was that a struggle for you before to know your worth?
For sure. Oh, I struggled with confidence. I didn't feel like I gained any confidence in myself just as a person until I was in like my mid 20s. Mm. You know, I don't know if you had the same thing. When did you finally like feel like I know who I am? I know what I'm worth. That's what's up.
Yeah. I mean, probably right around 30, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
And when it started settling for me of like, I know what I like, I know what I want to pull. I mean, obviously I will have to put up with some things I don't like to get to where I want to go. But I was like, I know who I am. I know my values. And it also was, you know, I was lucky where, it's so weird to say lucky, but I was lucky I had my son so early that he really focused me very young. And that was probably the reason why I was, you know, successful, you know, not very much monetarily, but in comedy and stuff, I was by my late 20s, more people knew who I was, you know, and because I had my focus with him. But as far as my self-worth, my self-value of me feeling confident, regardless of my career, regardless of like, you know, how my set went, that didn't really come until probably I was around 30 when I was like, and it was because I had some success, but then you kind of start like, oh, I'm not a genius. Why do some of these people are like, you're a genius, you're brilliant. And you're just like, oh, I can't trust this. This thing that I thought that I was going to put value in is not real.
Right.
And so I have to really, and it took therapy and a lot of things to really to go like, oh, I can't put like how many specials I get as what makes me valuable or, you know, how many acting jobs I get. It has to really be about what I feel about myself.
For sure. I've thought about that a lot with you and like having your son early. That's kind of, I mean, it's obviously something that I don't know about, but I have to imagine that makes you hyper focused early where you're like, it's not about me anymore. I gotta really, you know, figure it out.
And yeah. I think it goes one or two ways, you know, yeah. You see, there's guys that just run away or become perpetual children or kind of blame the child for ruining their lives. And then there's people who step up and know that just because you don't have to, you know, get rid of your dreams because you have a kid, and often they become the reason to achieve your dreams.
Absolutely.
So,
well, you went the right way, obviously, and figured it out. And it's amazing, man.
Hi guys. You know me, it's your boy Ron Funches. And if you know anything about me, you know, I love sleeping, napping. I love a good mattress. Not only are they great for sleeping, not only are they great for lovings, but they're also great for bed picnics. They're also great for just relaxing and escaping away from the hellhole that is this world today. And in order to do that, you need to have yourself a mattress that is custom fitted for you. That's the best way to the clothes of the best is the way that your health, your medicine and things like that is the best, and it's the best way your sleeping can be, because you know how hard it is to get some good sleep these days because of the pandemic, because of things, the drama going on in the world today, a lot of stress going on, people just carrying that in your life. And if you sleeping on a terrible mattress, then you're not well rested when you wake up to face the day, and that's gonna happen. I remember back when I was a young man, I did not have a good mattress. I would feel the box spring poking me in the back all the time, and I would just wake up angry. I just would wake up with a lack of focus. So you got to get good sleep. You need to do that, and Helix Sleep is here to help you. They have a quiz that takes just 2 minutes to complete and matches with your body type and sleep preference to find the perfect mattress for you. Everybody's different. We're all snowflakes. We're all custom fitted. And Helix knows that. They have a soft, medium, firm mattress. Mattress great for cooling you down if you sleep hot. And even a Helix Plus mattress for the plus size folks. Or if you just want to have threesomes in there. I took the Helix quiz and I was matched with a medium firm mattress. And I like to sleep on my back. And it's a great, good mattress. It's easy. It just showed up at my house. We unrolled it. We popped it out. It puffed up like a giant marshmallow, and it was easy, fun, got delivered quickly and no problems. And you know me, if I didn't have that mattress, if I wasn't telling the truth, I'd tell you. But we got it. It sleeps well, doing well. So if you're looking for a mattress, you just take the quiz, order the mattress that you're matched to, and the mattress comes right to your door, shipped for free. You don't have to go to a mattress store ever again, because I know I'm sick of going to the mattress store 6 times a week. Helix is awesome, but you gotta take my word for it. They were awarded the number one best overall mattress pick of 2020 by GQ and Wired magazine. Just go to helixsleep.com/funches. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz. They will match you with a customized mattress to give you the best sleep of your life. Not only that, they have a 10-year warranty. You get to try out 100 nights risk free. They'll even come and pick up the mattress if you don't love it, but they're sure you will. And Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows. Wow. They just assume you got a significant other. For others, for our listeners at helixsleep.com/funches. Again, that is helixsleep.com/funches.
Yeah, Yeah, those were some of the early bits about your son that I remember seeing those 2 clips on Rooftop about then. I was like, God, that's funny.
Yeah, I think it was helped set me apart as well, because if you took that away from me, I was just like a regular stoner comic, dime a dozen stoner comic, you know. Right. But you add this responsibility of this kid and all of a sudden you're like, oh, this guy's kind of interesting. How does he manage his fucking life? You know?
Totally.
Still trying to figure it out.
You just turned 17, is that right?
Yes, 17 years old. Yeah. Now he's watching M-rated, playing M-rated games, watching R-rated movies.
That's what's up. His
life. He knows what's up.
That's what's up.
What are some of your goals? Like, what are some of your big goals in life? What do you want? If your career were to go exactly how you see it, what would we want from Nick? What do you want to do?
I really, really want, I mean, I love comedy so much. And I love, you know, I love network comedy. I love stand-up. I really, really, and I think this goes back to being a kid, I always loved period dramas. I really want to do some like heavy-hitting like period drama movies.
I like that.
Yeah. I really like, I just watched, I'd never seen it. I just, the other night, you know, we're all looking for stuff to watch. What haven't I seen? I finally watched Road to Perdition.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that movie? Paul Newman and Tom. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, like this is the kind of movie I want. This is cool. It's period drama, stuff like that. I don't think for my look, at least at this point, there's a huge niche for my look and stuff like that. I mean, I you know, I feel like I'll be the nerdy tech guy in comedy for a minute, but that's all right. You know, but that's where I would ideally like to go.
Did it ever bother you to be just you know, I'm not gonna say pigeonholed because your career is still young, but do you feel just kind of like you have more to show, more to offer?
Sure, but I try not to get impatient about it.
Yes,
I'm like, this is what I can do right now, and that's fine. I love it. You know, I'll be Marcus for a while. As long as Marcus is needed, that's fine. And then, you know, I'm not I'm trying not to get in a hurry, and I'm trying to be thankful for what I can, the way I can fit in now. Because a lot of people just can't fit in or just don't get the opportunity to, you know. So that's, you know, I have the opportunity to do something, and maybe because it's not exactly where I see myself going down the road, doesn't mean that's not amazing right now.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That's a what about you? What do you, what's your ultimate?
Oh, my ultimate goal, we talk about it a lot on this pod, is that I want to make a thoughtful, hilarious, also very just poignant show about being a single dad of a son with autism.
That's amazing.
Just represent that group of people and show that there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of members of the autistic community. There's a lot of these children that are growing up and getting out in this world. And just because they have a disability that's not very visible, you know, it doesn't get a lot of, and it just doesn't get a lot of representation. And I want to,
it's got to come with a ton of challenges that aren't, that people just don't know about. I mean, people know about, but it's not, you don't see it.
Honestly. Yeah. And when you do see it, it's almost always either positioned as this like dire, oh, woe is me, we'll never survive situation, or this like, we have this magical kid that can, you know, get all the lotto numbers for us, you know? And there's just a real world that exists that's somewhere in between.
There's an in between this is horrible and Rain Man.
Yes.
There is an in-between.
Yes, and that's what I want to show. I'm a strong believer in showing good dads on TV. That I think that we've gotten away from that for a long time, and especially good black dads, and I want to show stuff like that.
Real motherfuckers out there that handle they business.
Yes, Sinbad.
Business.
So that, and I just would love to, like, any movies that want me that I can do. I would love to do a movie about pro wrestling that's just a fun indie comedy. And I just like to continue to get better. I mean, that's why I do this podcast, because I would watch these kung fu movies a lot. One of my favorites was this IP Man, Ip Man. I don't know if you're familiar with. But it was really cool because it was about this master who, like, he didn't want any students. He didn't want to show off. He never even really wanted to fight. He just wanted to practice. He just wanted to get better, because that's all that mattered to him, was the pursuit of getting better. And I was like, that's when I feel I'm at my best, when I'm not worried about what my friends are getting, when I'm not worried about, like, getting some nice, well, I'm never worried about a nice car, but, you know, I'm getting a big check or something. Right. When I'm just worried about getting better, and because I know that's what I can control, is the effort. And so that's what I really want. Like, I want that show, I want the movies, but what I really want is to continue to get better, and people, when they see me 5 years from now, 10 years from now, go, God damn, he's better than I was the last time I saw him.
Right. One of my favorite things, it's one of my favorite things in life, but it's one of my favorite things, especially in show business, is when you see somebody who you kind of know as one thing, who, you know, like, you've seen them do, you know, a certain type of character, a certain type of show for a long time, and that's kind of their thing. And then all of a sudden they do something that you weren't expecting, mm-hmm. or they get cast in maybe something that you're like, that's a weird casting choice. Maybe when you heard about it, or like they have a show where you're like, that's weird for them to do a show, and then they kill it. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wow, like, I never knew they had that in them. And it's so cool to see how much, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No.
I see. I mean, I totally feel like you doing a show like that would be like, why? It'd be like, why Ron Funches is like the, you know, why is he doing a show about being a dad of a kid with autism? Like, that's doesn't seem like him. And then you're like, wow.
Yeah. That's a cool thing. That, I mean, trust me, man, that's what I, when I do my free rides, that's what I put. I go, I want to surprise people. I want them to know because I put in the work, you know, and we all put in that work mostly. There's some who don't, but I put it in an acting class. I put it in, you know, even when I was at AP, you know, like I put in the work. I learned my lines. I know what's going on in the scene. I know that you don't have to remind me of what we're doing. You don't have to remind me of my lines. I, you know, especially if I'm a guest, I feel like it's my job. Hey, I'm only in this much. I better know my shit, you know? And so I take it seriously. And so I want to, yeah, I very much, I want, because when I go in the pitch, that they'd always want like, oh, what's your next sitcom-y thing? What's your next undateable type thing? And I'm like, no, I want to, this is what I want to do. I want to show you the real, where I've come from, where I've been through, and I know I can do it, and I know I can handle it. So for you to say that, and it kind of, you know, just makes me feel good, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, no problem. That's it's interesting how, like, you know, being a guest on things and being around, you know, where you feel like you're coming into a situation where you're a guest, it just makes you step up and like be on your game. That's yeah.
Yeah. Because you know, you don't, I've been in, I've had some stories. Well, I mean, I guess I still was on my game, but I had just been on some shows where it was just known, where it's just like, hey, if the guest is fucking up, they're going to want to get rid of you and they'll just find somebody else to do it. And I remember I was doing this one show, Selfie, I think it was called, and I just was doing this part, and they just kept calling cut and had to redo the scene. And then they called me over with the lead actor, and they were like, let's go through it together. And then we went through it together, and then I go, oh, okay, that's where you... I go, you don't know, there's a tempo change here. You're messing up here. And for me, and then when I said he's messing up, I heard all the writers in the background laugh. And then I go like, oh, holy shit. He called this meeting because he thought I was fucking up.
Right, right, right.
He didn't know he was fucking up. And I was just, I mean, I learned, I was like, hey, I don't like this guy. But it was still a lesson of like, no, you're not going to catch me. I'm going to stay on my game.
Yeah.
This is my job and I take it seriously.
Do you have any, I'm always curious to ask this of everybody. Do you have any nightmare audition stories where you said something where you're like, oh man, that was bad?
Yeah. Oh yeah. My first year of auditioning, or I guess my first 6 months before I got into acting class was the worst. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know anything. I remember I had a audition for that show Happy Endings, or I think was the name of it.
Yeah, I worked and, with you guys.
Yeah, and so I went in, and I just remember stopping in the middle and just being like, I'm sorry. I go, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what the scene is. I don't know. I'm wasting your time. And I just had to excuse myself. And that was the when I got the call from my manager, and she's like, yeah, we're gonna pull you until you go to class. It was just so different, you know. There's just technical terms, you know, that I did not know from the stand-up world that apply to acting, you know.
My first audition ever in LA, ever, was to guest star on Silicon Valley season one. I didn't know how auditioning worked. I didn't know you walk in, you sign in, you sit down. I literally walked into McCarthy Avalera, you know, one of the best in comedy. I walk in that office and I announce to the whole office, I'm here for the audition. And they were like, yeah, go ahead and write your name and sit down.
You thought the seas are going to part for you.
I was that guy. I was like, I'm here for the audition.
We've been waiting. Here's your scone. Here's your... Oh yeah. Audition. It took a long time for me to get comfortable, for me to start enjoying it. It used to terrify me every single time because I was desperate because I needed the job.
Yeah.
And the more I was like, hey, I can only show them who I am. I cannot make myself become what they need. You know,
that was when the world opened up to me professionally, when I stopped trying to play the mind game of what do I think they want? and trying to be that, but just being myself. And I was like, that's not my job to figure out what they want. My job is to do it the way I think it should be done and show my personality. And that's it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it was difficult for me at first because, you know, a lot of the roles that were coming my way when I first started were a lot of stereotypical black roles of like gang member or whatever. And I had to always either just go and bomb at it. Or at one point, like I did a movie called Get Hard because it was comedy and it was fun. Oh, but yeah. Then I would start getting real drama gang member auditions. And I had to be like, tell my agents, I was like, I don't want to ever play a gang member again. Like, I don't ever.
You're not that guy. You're a sweet guy.
Yeah. And I don't. Yeah. That's what I learned, that I might not have as many auditions, but what worked best for me is if I don't do an audition that mutes the best parts of me, which are my niceness, my charm, my kindness.
That's why your role in Get Hard was funny, was because he was a gang member, but he was like kind of a sweet guy.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why that worked.
Exactly. And so I didn't want to play that for real ever. Oh, but I love acting. I love it so much. You love which? Do you love them both? Are they both like your children? Is there one that you like a little more?
I think they're both like my children. Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that I always love meeting people, you know, on sets who come from stand up. Mm-hmm. You know, like I thought, not a lot of people, well, more in comedy, but a lot of people don't come from that world of stand up. And it's a unique world. So when you meet somebody who also comes from that world, I feel like there's an instant meeting of the minds.
Yeah.
You kind of know each other's road there.
Yeah.
Well, that's why Patton and I are such good friends, is because, you know, I was the only other person on that show who came from stand-up.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, we know the road. We know where each other have been.
And I'll also say this because I don't have a current job, and you probably can't because you do, but actors are fucking crazy and they're different in that way. And they're more coddled, and they're more not, when you're a stand-up, you're used to being put in the closet. You're used to be put on the road dealing with bullshit. And so you're kind of like, okay, like I know how to handle myself. And a lot of these actors are a little more fragile and a little more like, I needed everything to be right before I come in. And sometimes I have a hard time talking to them. So
every time there's a problem on set, and my favorite thing is when somebody on set will say, like, this is a nightmare. No, man, this is not a nightmare. We're making TV. Like, this is not a nightmare.
Yeah.
You know? Doing a one-nighter in Louisville, Kentucky for $40, sleeping in a motel with an outside door, that's kind of a nightmare. We're at NBC Universal Studios right now. This is not a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think it makes it a lot easier. It makes the long days on set a lot easier when you know the alternatives and what else there is that you could be doing. You're like, I could be in the middle of Nebraska doing a one-nighter, but right. I'm going to go home tonight. I'm being well-fed, well-paid. Yeah. Yep. They done brought a coffee truck by. And still people complaining. And what makes me mad is like, we're not even making a drama here. Oh. Like, why are you mad?
This is funny, man. Read what's on the page. It's funny. This is all funny.
Yeah, I think stand-ups in Hollywood have
a little more grounded.
Yes, we're more grounded. Exactly. Yeah. And that's how my fiance, who doesn't, you know, she's more of a writer than she's behind the camera stuff, but she always put it that, like, she's like, there's a hierarchy of crazy in Hollywood. And she goes, like, I thought you were stand-up crazy, but I forgot you act as well. So yeah, you're kind of in the middle. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, you're right.
I have to watch myself, like, you know, when you're around it so much, I always try to watch myself, because I'll be like anybody. I'll fall into the trap of you know, like something that's kind of less than satisfactory, that's not a big deal. And that actor piece you play, like, this is bullshit. Like, this is ridiculous right now that I have to deal with this. It's like, no. Easy. Take a step back. Not a nightmare. Calm down. Don't be that guy.
Yeah, I think that's why I can never quit doing stand-up, because I need that balance. I love the independence of in the just independent thinking that comes with stand-up that gets really stripped away with acting, because you go from like making your own schedule, you know, a lot of times when you're starting, booking your own shows, doing everything, promoting yourself. And then you go to a place where not only they tell you what time to be there, where they'll tell you, you ask if you can go pee, you know? Right. And to me, I had a big, like my first acting job, I had a big problem with like telling someone I was going to the bathroom. I'm like, right. I'll be back, you know? But I learned, hey, there's money involved. There's things involved.
You know where you are.
Yeah, if I missed my time, then I'm fucking up their money. So right. I learned a little bit more, but I can't ever like have that be my only job or I start getting weird.
Right. Do you ever feel, has anybody ever tried to make you feel like, because you come from stand-up, you didn't really, you know, the way stand-ups transition into TV and movies, that you didn't really put in the work of auditioning for decades with nobody giving you a job, and then you feel less than, and you're like, no, but hang on, like, you don't understand. I've been putting in the work in a different way outside of Hollywood. I've been doing stand-up 5 nights a week. I've been on the road. I've been, you know, cutting my teeth waiting for somebody to see me there. Like that's also putting in the work. Like this isn't a fast track shortcut.
Yeah, no, that's the thing that would make me laugh. I would go to my acting class and I would see people go like, start talking to me about stand up, and I go, oh, I'm thinking about getting into stand up because my manager told me that was a better way for me to get auditions. And right. I was like, well, you got a shitty manager.
Yeah.
I would never wish that upon anyone who doesn't love stand up.
Right.
You know? And I've been through exactly what you said. And in some ways I would judge people if I didn't know them. If right. I was on set and I was like, oh, I've never heard of this person. But I had to take that lesson of going, hey, they probably don't know what I went through. Mm-hmm. And I have to go and go, they must have put in the same level of work, the same effort, the same shit in their field to get to where so that we're in the same place today.
Right.
And when I started thinking like that, it just made me just kind of let go of all of it and have a kind of get back to the way I was raised, which is just, I respect everyone that I meet until you give me a reason otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so many avenues now where it's, you know, just your avenue isn't necessarily somebody else's. So yeah, you gotta,
And that's the beautiful thing. It's kind of like, you know, different religions or different cultures where you're like, as long as we all get to where we're trying to go, you can believe what you want. You can, you know, go the way about it you want to go. That's one of my favorite show right now, Dave, on FX. And
I got a Dave story for you in a second, but yeah,
please. But like I went into it, just starting it off and just going like, oh, I know Lil Dicky, he's a good rapper. Let me check it out. Let me see if he can act. And, you know, and I watched the first episode and I was like, oh, well, you could tell he's new at it. But then I started watching more episodes. I'm like, God damn, this motherfucker putting in the work.
Yeah.
This is a great story, great writing, great show. And I'm like, that's another example of like, he just showed his real world and the things that he's been through, and he brought that story to us, and which is exactly what I'm trying to do with my idea. So I'm like, this is exactly the show I should be watching right now. And I fell in love with it, and I love everything about that show. I mean, I already loved Andrew Santino because he's one of the best comics working.
I
fell in love with that whole show. It's an amazing show. What's your story about it?
Well, I auditioned for Santino's role. And I went in and so Little Dicky was there. And so was a guy who directed the pilot. He did Superbad, I forget his name. Mm. Anyway, it was like, and I didn't know that Little Dicky was going to be there reading. And so he was super funny. He went way off script and we're just riffing and it's going great. Everybody's laughing. And then at the end, he goes, this was one of those moments where I was like, oh no. He said, he's like, hey man, you did a great job. And I said, thanks, man. You did a great job too. And then I go, oh no. Oh God. It's his fucking show. Of course he did a great job. And I was like, you did a great job too. Like, no, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And I walked in, I was like, oh God. I told him he did a great job. He know. Oh.
You disrespected Little Dicky.
I disrespected Little Dicky. But to be fair, Santino is perfect for that role.
And yeah.
Kills it.
He does kill it. Yeah, I have. Yeah, we all. That's what I can always live with. If I see a thing I audition for, and then I see it, and I go, "Oh no, that's better." Like I auditioned for the part of the vampire familiar in What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh yeah.
But then I was like, "Oh no, that's the guy right there."
Yeah. Glenn Howerton said that to me one time. He's like, I never feel bad about not getting something if somebody else does it and they're amazing. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good point. Where I was seeing, I'm like, oh, that's better.
Yeah, but sometimes I have seen it a couple times the other way where I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
You guys just went with the name. You know I would have knocked. I'm hungry. I would have knocked that shit out. He didn't care. That was his fifth movie that year.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. I like talking with you. You're a fun guy.
You too, man. I'm glad that we're finally connecting, having been a fan of you for so many years.
No, I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And I like your, a lot of people don't like to be openly fans of people.
Love it. I think that endears you to some. Like, I always like people who are like, I've loved you for a long time. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Like, I always like that. And I think that it's a cool way to be. And it's true, man. Like I said, some of the, coming up and talking to you, like, on set. And, you know, you're like, he's such a nice guy. I'm like, yeah, but it was kind of selfish, man. I've been a Ron Funches fan for a long time.
But trust me, you know, especially on set, especially guests, and you need those ego boosts every now and then, because most part I was like, besides Patton, nobody knows me here, you know. But Mike, you know, I love Mike O'Brien, the reason why I get the work over there. So man, it's a good ass show as well. The people don't really talk about how good that show is. It's so well written. It's just like a classic, like, but sharp new age sitcom. It's a good show.
Didn't really hit, you know, as hard as I thought it might the first couple of years, but who knows, maybe with I think especially season 3 being on Peacock, it gets weird. Mm. It gets, you know, so maybe.
Well, I know my episode does.
That was pretty amazing though, to see those stunt guys. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never been a fan of professional wrestling, but there's something about seeing it done live, like the skill of like making it look violent, and I'm like, that's really cool.
I've always been a big fan, but that's one of the things I love. Like, I don't care when people are like, I don't love it, but when they can see it, I hate it when people disrespect it or just like, how could you like that fake stuff? I'm like, well, you're just an idiot now. Now you're like, you just discount all of movie and television because it's all fucking, you discount most of life if you're mad at fake shit, you know? So I just love the artistry. I love everything about it since I was a young kid. And to be able to get in the ring and have Lillian Garcia call my little fake wrestling name was a dream come true for me. Yeah. So I was into it. Well, I'm going to let you go and enjoy your evening. But before I do, I want to ask you one more question.
Sure,
I want to ask you a thing we ask every guest. That's just for a little piece of advice for maybe something you've been thinking about, chewing on, that can help our getting better audience to get better. I know that's vague, but I'm sure you'll nail it.
Everything's going to be okay. you're going to be okay. We're going to get through COVID, whatever you're going through, it's going to be okay. Life is not a constant state of misery and suffering. Everything's temporary, man. Feelings are temporary. All the bullshit you're going through, COVID, it's all temporary, man. Hang in there. You're going to be okay. Keep looking forward. Keep looking at that one, as F. Scott Fitzgerald said, that one thin ray of light that calls you forth to believe in a better morrow. It's there, man. Keep your eye on that.
I love that. It's beautiful. That's a thing I believe in all things. That's a reason to get through the bad, and it's a reason to celebrate the good, because all things are temporary.
We're going
to
be back on set soon enough. It's going to be okay.
Absolutely. I can't wait. I can't wait to continue to watch your success and to work with you again more in the future.
Yeah, man. When we get past all this, when things have some semblance of normalcy again, we gotta start hanging out.
I love it. I'd love it.
So I'd love to do this again back when we're doing it. You're doing it non-remotely. This has been great.
Yeah, that's better. That's better. Get real. All the energy. I love that.
Thanks so much for having me, man. Take care. Best to the family. Stay safe.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your time. Thank you guys for listening. Bye.